Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness, for any errors or omissions in podcasts, or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in the concluding episode of this two-part edition, I'm investigating the challenges of diagnosing type 1 diabetes in infants and young people, following the tragic death of a girl of just 2 years old who went into diabetes ketoacidosis, DKA, before the autoimmune condition was identified. These types of deaths are not uncommon among infants and young people in the UK because the symptoms are often combined with those from other conditions being experienced simultaneously. This has led to a call for higher professional awareness in primary care settings, together with a campaign for antibody screening to move from limited clinical studies to become more routine in infants as young as 2 years old. Following the tragic death of Lila Story, there have been calls for a national screening programme and more stringent regulations for testing when children present with classic symptoms. I've been speaking with Professor Parth Narendran, a reader in diabetes medicine at the University of Birmingham and lead of the Type 1 Diabetes Clinical Service at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham. He's been involved in a groundbreaking clinical study into the early surveillance of autoimmune diabetes, or ELSA for short.
This loss of beta cells that I mentioned earlier is because the immune system thinks the beta cells don't belong. Of course they do, but it's a process of misrecognition. It thinks it's an infection or a virus or something, and it starts chipping away at these. As it does so, it generates these antibodies, and antibodies we need to fight infection. So it's making these antibodies against the beta cell. And we can pick these up in the blood with a simple blood test. And these antibodies predate the need for insulin, often by years. And also they can also predict how quickly people are going to move on to insulin.
As we heard in part one, in early May 2025, Lila Story died in DKA from undiagnosed type 1 diabetes. She'd just celebrated her second birthday 3 weeks earlier. Since then, her father John Story has launched a petition with the UK Parliament for the introduction of legislation to improve diagnosis and introduce screening. He needs 100,000 signatures to trigger that debate. But after passing 10,000 signatures, he received an initial government response.
Early identification of type 1 diabetes through screening for antibodies prior to the onset of physical symptoms can provide clinical benefits, including helping to prevent diagnosis at the point of diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA. However, there is not currently a national screening programme in England.
However, it went on to say,
NHS England provides diabetes care in children. Due to insufficient evidence supporting routine mandatory testing for paediatric type 1 diabetes, it has no plans to introduce this at the current time. NHS England is not aware of there being any evidence for the feasibility and effectiveness of the mandatory offer of testing for type 1 diabetes in babies, toddlers and young children as a routine part of medical assessments.
John came into the studio to talk to me about his experience, the campaign he's launched, and frustrations over the initial response.
Politicians are getting this wrong. The ELSA study is not a screening programme, a universal screening programme at all. It's a voluntary clinical study for those potentially at risk of type 1 diabetes. But anyone can join it as long as they're 3 to 13. Lila was 2. The reason I've started up Delilah's Law campaign, the lines are getting blurred a little bit because there are calls for a universal screening programme, which I'm all for, so I'm fighting on that front. But I'm fighting for Lila's Law because if a child or an adolescent or a toddler or a baby is displaying any of the four T's, then they should be testing without assumption. It's only rare until it happens to you. If you nip it in the bud at GP intervention levels and you find out that they're diagnosed on site, before they go into serious, what we call DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, that therefore makes a person's type 1 diabetes care much easier to manage. Mm. We've been told by countless healthcare professionals, it's not our fault, but we're always going to feel it, you know? People just do not understand how dangerous DKA is. I have had over 160 emails so far. Of them 160 emails, I've had just 2 people who have been diagnosed at the point of access with the GP. The rest have gone into DKA, critical condition, where they have seen their child strapped to a table, desperately trying to find somewhere to put a cannula in because they're that dehydrated they cannot find a vein. And they go through days and days and days of thinking their child is going to die. A lot of them people have come out the other side. Lila is not so lucky. And we are not so lucky because, you know, we love her so much.
The story of Lila is absolutely tragic, and I've come across these so many times, and they unfortunately continue. It's so important to educate our primary care colleagues and support them with picking these conditions up early. And I've gone through some of the challenges of picking up type 1 diabetes, because it's often masked by other conditions and it's a rare condition. So John has a petition that he's got going around, and that is to encourage people to screen, you know, glucose in people who are presenting with the 40s, and I think that's absolutely...
And it's so easy.
And so it's so easy, but at the same time, you know, you have to think about it. And that's not happening currently.
No. So tell us about your visit to the House of Parliament.
I met with my local MP.
Yeah.
And I also met with an MP who I can disclose his name because he heads up the old party parliamentarian group for diabetes. His name's Tom Gordon. He's a Liberal Democrat. He looks about 15 years younger than me. But he was a lovely man. He's very much on board with the Lila's Law campaign. He's going to be writing to NHSE, so that's the educational side of matters, and various medical bodies to say, you know, why is this going so wrong? You know, so he's going to invite me to the All party parliamentarian group in the autumn, whereby I'm going to give evidence. There is an opportunity. I met with another one of my local MPs, and he's wrote to Wes Streeting, the health secretary, requesting an urgent face-to-face meeting on the discussion of how we could potentially look at legislating Lila's Law, kind of feeding it into the current guidelines, because there are guidelines already, and they're NICE guidelines, NG18, which stipulate if a child is displaying this, and this, or even the vomiting, because that's a sign as well, then you are to send that child to hospital under blue light conditions. If the GP has not picked up on any of these signs and has not tested for diabetes under NICE guidelines NG18, then that can trigger Lila's Law and saying, you're not doing your job, pal. It might sound a bit controversial. I don't mean to make it sound controversial, but the four T's is an excellent slogan and concept. However, it is out there in the public, but it seems to be quite tribal. It seems to be amongst the T1D community and their families. It doesn't seem to get further out. It doesn't seem to be on posters in GP walls and on the television and things like that. So it's kind of like, you know, more awareness needs to be raised so that basically when a parent goes in to a doctor's, it's going, my child is displaying four T's here, tiredness, thirst, you know, toileting, and all of a sudden they've lost weight overnight, they're thinning, yeah? I think my child has got type 1 diabetes, and that plants a seed in the GP's mind as well and goes, okay, can you test them, please? Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, so if you've got that public awareness as well as the GP awareness and them to intertwine, then there shouldn't be any more cases like Lila's. And Lila is not an isolated case.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast, and our investigation into the challenges of diagnosing type 1 in young people, especially infants. In addition to the importance of implementing testing in response to the presence of classic symptoms, the ELSA study is demonstrating the benefits of screening for antibodies. The study is to be expanded and extended in the UK. And screening in other countries has shown positive results in avoiding DKA in infants who would previously have been undiagnosed. There appears to be a growing body of evidence of the benefits of this type of screening in infants from 2 years old, as Professor Narendran explains.
So by doing a screening programme, this is a research study, remember, we can screen people who feel perfectly well, but pick up this immune process many, many years before. And that gives you time to do the studies, to inform them how long they're going to take before they need insulin. It gives time to prepare for a life with insulin. It reduces the risk of DKA significantly. And a recent Italian study showed that the DKA rates, you know, which classically are about 20% in most countries, it went down to zero because people knew this was coming. And this matches studies from Germany and the States, where one of the most effective, or the most effective way to reduce DKA at presentation is through screening. It shows that if you pick it up early and you can measure glucose and manage glucose much better, so they have better glucose for years to come. And the other big thing is that therapies are coming. Medicines are coming now that can delay the need for insulin. And there's a medicine licensed in the States that's been around for 2 years to delay the need for insulin in people at risk. And hopefully we will also get that in the UK. So screening programs, screening for type 1 has such a big role to play in healthcare going forward.
And is that across people, you know, so like a child like Lila, I know she was only two. Would that have picked her up?
Currently, ELSA is only screening 3 to 13. But with the extra funding, what we're planning to do is to expand this down to 2 and up to 17. There is very little evidence that screening below 2 picks up the antibodies because it takes a while for the antibodies to appear. So generally, most countries are doing sort of 3 upwards, and some countries are doing 2 upwards. So we're now going to move it down to 2.
And so the future, to avoid children, young people being diagnosed, this would be it, would it? Do you think the screening program would be the best way to avoid that?
Screening, I am convinced, is the best way to reduce DKA at diagnosis. And remember, the DKA at diagnosis disproportionately hits those who are more deprived, and in some studies also those of ethnic minority population. Some of that may overlap with deprivation. So, the people who are most needy are the ones who are hit hardest, which unfortunately is the case for many things in medicine. So, screening gets cuts through all of that. And in ELSA, we found that lots of people from minority ethnic and deprived areas absolutely want to engage. And we've been able to identify early type 1 diabetes in some of these families. And many of them would not have known about it otherwise, because there's no family history of type 1 in many of these people. And implementing a screening program in a country is a big piece of work. And it goes through the National Screening Committee. So the National Screening Committee needs to know that we have effective screening mechanisms, that we can, it's cost effective, we have a workforce in place, and a number of other things that they look at. ELSA's trying to answer some of those questions. Is it feasible? Can we screen the UK population in an effective way? And is it acceptable? Because some families may just not want to know. They'll say, look, I don't want to live with knowing this risk for all this time. I'd rather just know when they're diagnosed, albeit with all the caveats that come with an urgent diagnosis. So we're just finishing the first. It's been an incredibly popular study. So we're up to about 35,000 children consented. I think it's the largest pediatric study in the country. And we recently heard that we've got another 4 years funding to continue with this work. So, and there'll be lots of other things that we'll be doing in ELSA with this extra support. So we're really looking forward to it. So going forward, we're hoping that our answers can help support a case for national screening for type 1 diabetes.
The final word goes to Lila's father, John Story.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, I know. But we wish we knew more about it, and people's perceptions need to change as well, like we said at the start of this interview. So please, just sign a petition. If it's just for your little boy or your little girl, you don't want to go through what Lila's gone through, because it's a silent killer. And when it takes hold without treatment, it's absolutely horrible. So please sign.
And that brings us to the end of this special episode on the early diagnosis of type 1 diabetes in infants and young people. I hope you found this helpful and of interest. You can read more details and guidance, plus how to support the charity, the latest fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to Professor Narendran and John Story for talking to us, and also to you for listening.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.